This is Isaka's Page 2 Podcast.
Hello, you are listening to an Isaka podcast. I am your host, Megan Moritz, Isaka's Director of Global Volunteer Engagement. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Eric Anderson, the Director of Enterprise Security for Adobe, to discuss how Adobe built a zero-trust network platform. Hi, Eric. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so before we get started with all the technical questions, I thought we could spend a few minutes talking a little bit about radio. I saw that you worked in Seattle radio a while back, and yeah. I'm curious to know what you enjoyed about it, what you didn't. Radio played a big part in my life growing up, so I'd love to just talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. So back in the early 90s, a little bit of the late 80s, I was a producer at a couple local radio stations for the drive time shows. So I was lucky enough to be the producer for a station called The End here in Seattle when they went on the air in August of 91, which we all know is when everything started breaking. Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, all that stuff was just going crazy. And so it was a lot of fun getting to meet artists, going to shows, being able to hear music before anybody else heard it before, because the internet really wasn't there before. It was all the old fashioned tape decks, reel to reels, and CDs
parts,
were
all that stuff. Yeah,
all the parts. Oh yeah.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and was able to do that for several years.
Did you go to school for that or no?
No, it was, I got into it through an internship in my last year of college. I worked for a radio station in their promotions department. And then a bunch of the folks that worked there moved to this new station as part of them going on the air, and they took me with them. So I'd been doing some kind of production on the side, some weekend shows and stuff like that. So it was just kind of, I've always had a knack around music and been involved with music. And so I was always the AV guy in high school and, you know, running the boards and all the concerts and the shows and stuff like that. So it was pretty natural.
Very, very cool. My dad was a DJ while I was growing up. And so it was, you know, we'd go sit at the station while he did his shows. But when I hear Seattle radio in the early 90s, I just think of Frasier and, you know, KACL and
Yeah. It was a fun time.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a fun time to be in radio, especially in Seattle with all the bands that were coming out at that time. Okay, so I guess we'll get to the point of the podcast. So my first question for you is, what do you think zero trust security has gained so much traction over the past few years? Or why do you think zero trust security has gained so much traction over the past few years?
I think it's really because it's one of the rare occasions where you can provide a great, not great, but improve a user experience and improve security at the same time. So I think what's really neat about it is that not only are you providing a way to secure your infrastructure, ways people log into the systems, but as part of it, you start creating a better experience for the users, such as, I know we'll talk a little bit later about how we do it ourselves, but for instance, our implementation is passwordless. So, you know, no user is ever going to complain that they have to enter their password less than they did before. So it's really, for me, I think that's where a lot of the traction has come in. I think people understand that, you know, the world shifted. We do things now online, on the open internet, not everything is inside your corporate network anymore. So it's just providing a, you know, way to secure that.
Now, to be totally honest with you, I am not a security person, but I work with our chapter leader volunteers all over the world. And I called one of them yesterday and I was like, what does zero trust security mean? So that I kind of know what I'm talking about. And when he said, oh, you'd have to enter your password fewer times, I'm like, well, that would be good. I'd be okay with that. So in that vein, how has the pandemic and the drastic increase in remote work, which many of us are still doing, affected the prioritization of this zero trust for organizations?
So in my view, it's accelerated it greatly, because now that everybody's at home, coming in from their home networks. You know, it's the equivalent of, you know, sitting at a Starbucks or any open network. You've got people trying to access, you know, critical work functions with confidential and sensitive information. And so what the zero trust method is, and with zero trust, meaning in my mind, you know, we assume you're coming from a compromised device. So we don't trust you until you prove to us you are trusted. It gives us a whole nother level of as the employee or the person comes into the applications, we understand who they are, where they are, what their behaviors have been. So it really just allows us to be more secure. But as we mentioned, better user experience. It also helps take off some of the load on the internal network, because in many cases we're able to provide services without needing traditional VPN, as an example. So there's some cost savings involved, as well as increasing security at the same time.
So this is not one of the questions that I have to ask you, but I'm going to ask anyway for my own personal knowledge. So when I authenticate and I do the multi-factor authentication and I'm on VPN and all of that, and I have to do it, obviously, when I log into my machine, why is it that I have to do it when I'm going on to a web-based application that's also within the system, or I'm opening Teams, or I'm like all these different things I'm opening, I have to keep doing that. Why is that?
Yeah. A little bit is a technology component. Most of the applications that we log into nowadays are in a web browser, and people, and once you've logged in, so logging into your computer is different than logging into, say, your Chrome web browser on your computer. So you have to kind of re-authenticate into the browser. And in a lot of cases, the browser will remember your login throughout the day using cookies or other methods. Where I think you see more logins frequently is in a couple places. If you're using a different web browser, if you're doing two browsers throughout the day, one web browser doesn't know that the other one's been logged into, so you might have to do it there. The other one that I see quite a bit is people over the years have been in the habit of closing their web browser. So if you close it and quit out the application, it forgets everything it was doing beforehand. And then when you open it back up again, it's going to re-ask you again, who are you? What do you need access to? So one of the things we talk to our employees about is getting in the habit of just minimizing the browser. If you need to get rid of it, don't quit it. Just get it out of your way while you're using it. And as long as you keep that session open throughout the day, you should see far less authentications. The other thing I would add, some of it is intentional as well. I know we do this a lot. Depending on the sensitivity of the application, we may want to just double check again and say, hey, is this, you know, if you're going in and maybe where you have access to, you know, changing your multi-factor or doing things that could affect your authentication, we want to re-verify you are who you say you are. So there are some situations where we're going to do that, and it's very intentional.
Got it. Okay. Well, that helps, because I am a browser minimizer. In fact, I don't close it probably as often as I should. Okay. So let's now go into the specifics of Adobe. So what is Adobe Zen, and what are the main challenges that it addresses?
Yeah. So Adobe Zen is our implementation of Zero Trust. It's a Zen for us stands for Zero Trust Enterprise Network. So it was really for us a way to go down the Zero Trust path, knowing that, you know, half of the applications or more are on the internet, less requirements to come into the network. And we wanted to start providing a cloud-like experience for the internal applications that you would traditionally need VPN for. So the idea being, as you're going throughout your day, you shouldn't know or care where the app lives or what you need to do. You just want to get to it. You shouldn't have to take extra steps. And then we also have always had the mentality of, you're compromised until proving otherwise. So it's kind of a perfect marriage of, how do we build trust into a device and a user behavior, and then how do we give them a seamless access in with a better experience? And so for us, that was the big challenge, is Adobe is very focused on user experience, not only with our customers, but we also look at that internally. We want our employees and users to have a great experience. And so those were the two big challenges. How do we give a good user experience yet increase security at the same time?
And I saw you've been at Adobe for a very long time, especially in today's world, like 26 plus years. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time. Have you always worked in the security space there?
No, I haven't. Security is, in relative terms to my tenure at Adobe, is a newer component. I started in customer support, talking to users on the phone and helping them with PageMaker, if you really want to date way back. And then I spent about half of my time at Adobe in the product team space. So working in, I was part of the Creative Cloud team with the After Effects and the digital video products, doing release engineering. And so I really got a good handle on how do we build products, how do we deliver products, and what goes into them on that space. And then I eventually moved to IT and running services that were used by the engineers. So that kind of gave me another view of how do you secure things? How do you deliver what engineering needs in order to get their product shipped and out the door? And then an opportunity came to join the security team, and it kind of felt like accumulation of everything I'd done from customer support to engineering to service ownership. I had a really good perspective on what it would take to secure and have that kind of mentality and understanding our customers. So it was, I kind of feel like I was built for security and I just didn't know it until it happened.
I feel like that happens a lot with the IT auditors and the security people. They don't really know their path until they get there. And they're like, oh, this is what I was supposed to do. Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So because identity is at the core of Adobe's approach, how does that play out from an implementation standpoint?
So from an implementation standpoint, we've always been focused on identity, access, and governance. We were early on into some of the big vendors out there that manage identities, and we've leveraged that across the company, and we've got lots of automation and workflows for things, you know, for employee onboarding, offboarding, and integrating with products. And it's all based on, you know, who you are. And so what helped us is as we started looking at what Zero Trust meant, a big component of Zero Trust is verifying you are who you say you are. And then also looking at what are your behaviors, and let's kind of get used to how do you work? You know, when you come in the mornings, are there like 10 apps you use on a normal basis? And maybe on occasion you have something else you do. But start using identity and your authentications to start figuring out what's a normal behavior, so we could kind of build a profile of your identity. And that allowed us then to really then start building systems around it, around device trust and other pieces, to really have identity be the core of it. But then we can kind of expand out the circle and build that trust model.
And does this work, again, my own personal knowledge, does this work on like laptops, phones, across all types of different devices?
It does, yeah. So it works on all of our supported endpoints, laptops, desktops, and all the mobile devices. Yeah. So any device that a user would use as their daily or personal device or to access job functions, it works on that platform.
Okay, got it. Okay, so back to the password thing. In what ways is this certificate technology preferable to using username and passwords besides having to remember 75 passwords?
Yeah. Well, certificates at the time, so a little bit of history on our Zero Trust deployment. One of our goals when we first rolled it out was to leverage existing technology. And at the time, there really wasn't a single solution out there to deliver an end-to-end Zero Trust experience. And so what we decided to do, being an engineering company, is let's look at what are the services and products we have, and could we make them work together in order to deliver the same experience, which could help us, you know, minimize investments and the like. And one of them we had was a product that would allow us to do certificate authentication. And so we worked with the vendors to get those integrated into our authentication piece. And the original goal was to do the passwordless piece. And the certificates are great in that way, in that we can have our managed devices be reviewed to see all those things I talked about, user behaviors and who they are, where they're coming from, And based on that, we can issue a certificate of trust and say, yeah, we're very confident this person is who they say they are. And then by doing that, as they log in, it gives us the chance to be passwordless, be secure with knowledge. But the best part is, or one of the nice parts is if that behavior or our stance on if they are who they say they are changes, we have the capability then to immediately revoke those certificates and just kind of, at that point in time, they can't log in anymore. And it can be device specific, which is great. So if you think about it, many of us have multiple devices. You might have a Windows, a Mac, maybe an iPhone or an Android phone. You might have two or three devices you use. And if we can detect that you as the user are doing something unique or something we don't like or we don't trust on one of your devices, we can just revoke on that device only. You can still continue to work on your other device as long as your behaviors and there's nothing anomalous happening. So the great part is we get that flexibility with passwordless, but we can also then be less disruptive to getting work done if we believe it's really just a certain device that's behaving oddly.
And I would imagine that each company that's using this can make that call. If they're like, oh, this is risky, we don't like this. And another company's like, oh, we're fine with that. And that's just very specific. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So like most people who are not in the security space, I am obviously most familiar with Adobe from like a PDF perspective. And the digital signature that you can put on, the Adobe digital signature, is that related? Is that some of the technology that has crossed over throughout the years of the certificate-based technology where it's like, you are who you say you are. We're going to put your signature on here.
It's a similar philosophy, but completely different technologies.
Okay.
So in all honesty, I'm not all that deep into how the Adobe Sign does the identification. There's certificates that they use to help identify you are who you say you are. But with how we're doing certificates for users accessing systems, it's the philosophy is the same, but the way it's done is a little the process is very different.
Oh, yeah. Because obviously we're talking way more access than just like sign an Adobe document, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. That makes total sense. All right. So in your opinion, what's the key to maintaining a solid trust chain?
I think the biggest keys are doing continuous authentication and validation is how we look at it. So in your example where, you log in first thing in the morning and you get into your web browser, once that initial trust has been established, one of the things we're looking at under the hood is we're continuously evaluating the system. So every time the user maybe goes to a different site and they're using the established authentication session, in the background, we're doing another check to make sure, hey, do we still trust this is who we think it is? Has the device posture changed? So all this is going on in real time behind the scenes. And so at any point in time, if we see something that we're not comfortable with or something changes, it gives us that capability to, catch it right there and stop it through, certificate relocation or other means. The big key is continuous validation, not a set it and forget it, but we're always checking and looking.
And so if I were online and you decided, oh, she's doing something that we don't trust or whatever, would something come up on my screen or would it just like shut down? Like what would happen as the user? How would I know that? And I guess that ties to my question of what's the user experience like with Adobe Sign? What happens?
Yeah. In the rare cases where it would be, a device that it's like, oh, this is like, we got to stop everything and figure out what's going on. It would be just like a typical event where we would just say, hey, we're stepping in, and you would be receiving some phone calls and notifications from the respective security teams fairly quickly for something that was needed to be addressed immediately. For 90% of the stuff though, what would normally happen is the system would recognize something different is happening and they would reach out to you through automation, say, hey, we saw this behavior. Was this really intended? Was this you? It's like, let's say you logged in the morning from Seattle and in the afternoon you logged in from San Francisco. It would kind of go, hey, what's going on here? She was in this place in the morning and this place later. Maybe reach out and say, did you indeed travel or have you done something? Or, maybe you're using a VPN connection that's now in San Francisco, and we just want to understand it. It's very similar to maybe how your bank would notify and say, hey, we saw this kind of weird charge. We're kind of paying attention now. Can you let us know what's normal and what's not? And then we can build that into our system to recognize it. But we want to be very proactive, but we also recognize that we don't want to be disruptive unless it's the appropriate action.
Yeah, your bank example actually made me think of something. This was, I don't know, a couple of years ago. I was in another country and I logged into my bank to, you know, just check things out. And I started getting these alerts on my phone, like, you know, somebody's logging into your account from X country. Is this you? And like all of this stuff that it made me prove that I was who I said I was.
Exactly. And it's the same philosophy. You know, the bank doesn't want to stop you from doing transactions, but if you didn't respond or give them information to help verify it's you, they would have locked your account right there and said, we need to figure out what to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very glad that I had international access on my phone at that point.
That's right.
Okay. So how do you see this zero trust space evolving in the coming years, more of a future state?
I think we're just going to see more and more of it. And I think the part I think is really interesting with zero trust is for users, I think what they start experiencing is they get a better experience and they don't know that all of a sudden things are more secure and that they're actually having better postures and getting into systems. The great part is with the zero trust space is security becomes the default. And it's the easy path to go. It's when you deviate from maybe a security behavior or stance is when all the bells and whistles start going off. And so the nice part is, as long as it's just a better experience, I think, overall. The thing I'm real curious about seeing it evolving is right now Zero Trust has been really focused on the perimeter. You know, so the devices that you use to get into applications and services. I'm hoping, or I'd like to see it start expanding actually internally, start looking at servers and infrastructure and cloud and how people move laterally within the systems. And so if you somehow slip through and get in to access to something, how can we re-verify that, hey, you know, Megan's an administrator on this machine. It may be a different account, but we need to be able to tie it together and think about the next step. And I really think we're going to see more and more of that with, especially in the certificate authentication space. There's lots of neat things that can be done there. And as we get smarter about retiring like legacy protocols like Radius and Kerberos and all these old school things and wrapping around modern ways to authenticate and build trust.
I want administrator access to my laptop.
Everybody wants it, you know?
I know. And it's not even like I want to do anything bad. I just want like that freedom of, oh, I want to install this one little thing. And they're like, no, why do you need the one little thing on the computer? So it's very, and I had it for a long time. And then of course things changed and it's fine, but it's still like, oh, you took away my power, my superpowers.
It's very culture driven too, because it, you know, as a company matures or as, you know, especially nowadays, all companies have much more customer data that maybe you've never had before. So these kind of changes of, you know, just even administrator passwords, it's like, you know, do you really, everybody loves it and wants it, but do you really need it? And then you build kind of a practice around it to make sure people can get their jobs done, but make it more, less transparent too. You know, like in your example, depending on what you're trying to install, you know, you could question, well, why does this app need admin access to install it? Maybe that should stop me to think, you know, what's it doing that it can't be done in just MySpace? And so it kind of helps build awareness along the way, too.
Yeah. And I am good about going to IT and asking, you know, oh, something I need. But yeah, it is strange to have it all that stripped away from you. So as somebody whose day-to-day job, like I said, is not focused on security, I'm pretty sure I now know more about Adobe Zen and Zero Trust certificate technology than I ever dreamed I would. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us about Adobe, about your job, about life in general? Are we pretty good?
I think I'm good. I think I already overshared on the radio and life in general stuff. So, but yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm just really proud of the teams that I work for and that I'm on and kind of delivering something like this. And we've been able to kind of be on the cutting edge and share our story across the industry, because I think it's something that everybody should be doing. And one of the things we're really proud of our implementation was the way we were able to take existing investments and build a zero trust system that is as robust as anything out there. And I think it's a good message for companies. It's like zero trust doesn't have to be go out and buy this end all be all product and put it in and have it take over your world. We would argue that most companies have probably 90% of what they need already. You just need to look at ways, how do you connect it together and use it that way.
Awesome. Well, Eric, it was so wonderful chatting with you today. Thank you again for taking time and for oversharing on the radio. I didn't think it was oversharing.
So no, it's fine. I'm just joking.
So again, I am Megan Moritz, and this has been an Isaka Podcast.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Page to Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.